Welcome to the Money Tree Real Estate Investor Podcast, where we learn from real estate professionals across the industry. They will share about how they got into real estate, the big wins they have celebrated, the mistakes they have made along the way, and the advice they have for anyone following in their footsteps. Money really does grow on trees. Hey everybody, it's William Hollins here for another episode of the Money Tree Real Estate Investor Podcast. I've got a special guest. I'll let him go ahead and kick it off.
Hey everybody, this is Wayne Courageous. William, really appreciate you having me on your show today and look forward to a great discussion.
Yes, sir. So before we get started, I'd love to hear a little bit more about your background. I understand you are an Eagle Scout and you also served in the military. So I want to thank you in advance for that service. Tell us a little bit more about those things.
Yeah, so Eagle Scout. So we were really into scouting growing up. That was the thing that my dad was really active with us in doing. We were in Troop 511 in Austin, Texas, and which was a really great troop. But we were able to go do a lot of camping, a lot of things that you would hope that Boy Scouts would offer, including like Philmont, and went up to Canada and did like Northern Tier. But all that said, you know, I was able to, you know, earn my Eagle Scout in eighth grade. You know,
wow, that's pretty impressive. Yeah,
I've always been very, very goal oriented like my entire life. And so that was a big accomplishment. But I worked really hard at early age, you know, going through, you know, you show up to the meetings, you go to the campouts, and you work on some things after, you know, after scouting, and you know, those things can happen. My brother, you know, he waited till like his 18th, like right before his 18th birthday, right? You know, to finish it up. But no, I finished eighth grade and then stayed in scouting through high school and played sports and all. But I did join the Marine Corps in 2003. So appreciate the shout out on that. That feels like a whole nother life ago. I love the saying, not as lean, not as mean, but still a Marine. That holds very true to me. I don't think I've ran since the Marine Corps.
Okay.
I definitely have done plenty of steps and, you know, to make up for that. But yeah, so that was 2003 to 2007, the Marine Corps. And I've always been very passionate and driven about real estate. Got the bug early in high school. Through some friends' parents who were developers in Austin, where I grew up. And right in the Marine Corps, this was probably 2008 when I was able to get to my first duty station in 29 Palms, where I bought my first single family rental. And it was, you know, I think it was like a 2-bed, 1-bath. Looking back, you know, it's a very small, I think it paid $80,000, 100% financed through, you know, just, and we can go off on real estate as well. But yeah, you know, 2007, joined a Fortune 150 commercial real estate company in Washington, D.C., really focused on property management operations. And then that role took me to Houston, Austin, and back to Houston. And then 2019 started, I would say, my fourth baby. I have three kids, but this is probably my fourth baby. CREI Partners, which focuses primarily on multifamily build-to-rent developments, where we, you know, raise capital, operate, buy properties, and, you know, reposition those. So that's a little bit about me.
That's cool. Yeah, going back to the running for a second. So I had ankle surgery this year, and I'm just about to finish up PT. Just ran my first 2-mile run in probably 18 months. On Monday of this week, and I'm hoping to run a marathon in 2023. So putting it out there right now.
Good for you. Okay. Well, I'm going to put a little note calendar to reach it back out to you this time next year. See how you do. That's a huge accomplishment. We, even in the Marine Corps, we didn't run, what is it? 22 miles, 21 miles. What's the marathon?
26.2.
Not even close. 26.2. Yeah. I think the most I ran was about 13. So just half a marathon.
Hey, that's still far though. I've never ran that far.
So you know, in the Marine Corps, for all the Marines out there, they would laugh at this. But you know, I was coming out of boot camp running 21 minutes, about 3 miles. So 3 miles in 21 minutes, and I still felt like a bag of, you know, crap, because these guys, I mean, a lot of them, if you're not doing 3 miles in 18 minutes, you know, the drill instructor is a little disappointed, right? So the push is 3 miles in 18 minutes. So, but yeah, the fastest I ever did was 3 miles in 21 minutes. And in any other world, that would be really a great accomplishment. But I just remember looking back, I'm like, oh gosh, that's the best I could do. But
For sure. So, last question before we kind of dive into the real estate conversation. So, I saw you went to OU for a master's degree. So, I was going to ask you, I'm a big football, basketball fan, Baker, Kyler, or Jalen Hurts, who would you want on your team?
Okay, so little funny story. So I did get my master's from OU, my master's of economics. A little story behind that, talked about a little earlier, very goal driven. So in the Marine Corps, I had the opportunity to go to school. And that was a big, I always tell people now, like, don't go to the Marine Corps for school, go because you really want to serve your country and don't even care about what job you may potentially get, because in the Marine Corps, they could send you anywhere and you could be doing anything. But I had the opportunity to get my schooling while I was in. I was always at the headquarters battalion, doing a lot of logistical work, worked with a lot of officers who were very focused on education. So I finished my undergrad in 3 years while I was in. And a day after finishing up my undergrad, I went to the education office. And the one university that was sort of doing, because I was very focused on business, and the closest to business they had was a master's of arts in economics. And that university happened to be University of Oklahoma, which is a school that I actually was not a big fan of because I pretty much bleed orange, grew up in
No,
Austin,
don't
Texas.
say
I know
that.
you're an
No,
Aggie. I know
no,
you're an Aggie. So I bleed orange. And I would probably say Baker. But I've never stood foot on the campus. I don't know if I dreamed this or actually, I mean, it's many years ago, but my dad is, and my mom, Longhorns, and asking permission that I could even go to OU, even though they're not paying a cent towards it. But yeah, looking back, it was well-earned degree. I mean, I finished it a lot in Okinawa. I did get out, had to do a couple more classes. But that was, a great benefit I had while I was in the Marine Corps. I tried to go for OU football when I got out. I'm like, hey, I got this degree. And it just, when you grow up with a team that's like your team, like, and trust me, it's hard to be a Texas Longhorn fan. It's like being a Dallas Cowboys fan. Like, it's just painful, right? We always, we could do well. And then I mean, it's just a hard life being a Longhorn. But it's just something that's been in my DNA. So, and my son, we were talking about this before the show, but out of the womb, he was a Longhorn fan. Like, it just the kid, we live in Aggie country, and he wears his orange very proud, and that does put him in some situations at school and other places where I'm like, can you tone it down a little bit? So not to be so in your face about being a Longhorn.
Now I'm glad you're in the Bryan-College Station area, so that Aggie, love can kind of rub off on you, and you
Yes.
might get it figured out one day.
Honestly, if one of my kids went to Texas A&M, I'd be extremely proud and happy because it'd be close by. So I don't, that's definitely not going to be having happening to Hunter. He will not go to Texas A&M based on his choice. But I'm planting the seed for my middle child, Lily, because she loves animals. We live on some acreage. We've got cows and chickens and such. And I want her to, I'm like, oh, this is a great vet school. This could be something
It's one of the
you,
best.
yeah. So, who knows what she'll end up doing. She's nine, but planting
She's
the
got some
seed
talent.
early, William. So
Yes, sir. So I know we connected through Race Masters. So why did you join Race Masters, and what are some of your goals, the next 3 to 5 years in real estate?
yeah, so Raise Masters is a mastermind program that Hunter Thompson puts together. I read his book about raising capital, and really, I mentioned I started CREI Partners. It's a real estate investment company back in 2019. 2021, I believe it was, we had 167 unit under contract. It was super exciting. Met all the return criteria, great strong area in San Antonio. I had the property management team. I had the guy to back sign on the loan. they talk to you in real estate investing about having your team in place, right? And I've always viewed myself as a leader and sort of in a quarterback situation in a way, because you're just building your team around you to execute the deal. And had all the pieces, lender lined up, I mean everything, but we were short raising about $3 million. I think the whole raise was a little under 6 million. We were able to raise at least half of that without concern. And I'd say not concern, like it was tough raising. It's always tough raising capital, but we made up to around that 3 million, and we just couldn't raise the rest. I had reached out to many people. I had a podcast myself, and so you think that all these relationships and things, and you see a lot of people who say they can raise capital and who showboat on social media and such, but when rubber meets the road, they're not able to do it, right? Things change when you actually need them to. So, looked into some programs on how I can raise capital. So, Raise Masters was a program I joined to one, put myself in a room where other capital raisers were in hopes to rub elbows and be part of a larger group with that, but also learn sort of the strategies behind raising capital. So that way I'm more, real estate is a team sport, but sometimes there are certain things that you just can't always count on other people for. And raising capital sometimes is one of those things. So that's why I joined Raise Masters. I'm year two in that. We've invested, and I view that as an investment into myself and our company. It's not a cheap mastermind by any means. The other thing too is they held really good real estate conferences. So January of last year I was in Los Angeles doing a real estate conference. We're about to go to Kentucky next month, and just meeting with really great people. And a few of those people we were able to do deals on in 2022. So so that's
Wonderful.
sort of why I got in Raise Masters and why I continue being in Raise Masters. It's just to be around, like-minded people and build that relationship and network. So I'm not back in that position in 2021 where, I'm not able to, close a deal because of money.
For sure. Definitely, man. So you have a very unique story to tell. You've got to be an asset manager and property manager for several very nice high-end office spaces within Austin, Houston, and some other markets. So you got the CPM certification as well. So what kind of perspective do you bring that's helpful, to a team in real estate acquisition?
Yeah, no, I appreciate you asking that. So, real estate is my hobby. It's my passion. It's my love. Everywhere I go, I'm thinking real estate. I'm looking at the light off. I'm looking at the discoloration of bulbs. Of it just when you are so real estate, and this could be any career. If you're in construction management, right? Or you're a doctor, a lawyer, or a race car or whatever it is, your passion is always going to be on your mind, right? And so I'm extremely fortunate to have real estate, but to be on my mind. So it's whether it's land or storage, anything. It's something that I just really enjoy, and it's just part. So it never feels like work. So I did start. I mentioned the single my first rental probably when I was, I don't know, 19. And I've always been investing in some type of real estate, whether it's my single family rentals, and until recently, we've got multifamily, build to rent, and a storage unit that we are very active in. And so there are a lot of people that are getting into the real estate game. They know not much. Like they're trying to stay active. They want to be active, and there's an education curve, just like with any industry, right? So it helps me that I've had over 15 years of real estate experience, and so the perspective that I'm really bringing to the table is day one of closing. That's when things really get tough and hard, because you are transitioning potentially a new property management team. You're having to change the feel and the the I don't know what I was saying. So like a property, for example, we bought last year, to the apartment locators and everybody around that neighborhood viewed this property as a second, third chance property. If you can't rent here, go to this place. And so when you're going in and you're putting in an incredible amount of money to reposition and renovate the exterior, what you don't really think about is that it's more than just a physical change. You have to change the perspectives and the mindsets and everything from the employees to the residents to locators and property managers and everybody around. So that's something that I really enjoy. It's a lot of hard work, and takes a lot of time, but it's something that as an operator, as an asset manager, property manager mindset, I'm sort of in my wheelhouse, right? And so you mentioned the CPM designation. So it's a certified property manager designation through IREM, Institute of Real Estate Management. And it's think of it as sort of the master's or black belt of property management. CCIM is a great designation for investment managers. The CPM was something that I just had a really fortunate opportunity when I was in Washington, D.C., where our company was really promoting, that extra learning. So I raised my hand. I was like, yeah, I'm hungry. I'm ready to learn. So we did that as well. So the one thing that I've always continuously tried to do is continue to learn. So, a few years, I'll say like 6 years ago, my kids were super, super young. Had a little bit of GI Bill money left, so I went back to, get my MBA. And that MBA really sparked, William, the entrepreneurship of what I could be doing, right? When you're working and you're heavily focused on your job, which is important, and I still do, but when you have that entrepreneurial spirit and you're like, hey, this is something I can be doing and doing really well at, you start going that direction as well. So short answer is really more the operations day to day of just having to deal with, the toilets, termites, and issues that other people just don't want to deal with, right?
That's awesome. Yeah, I love that. So obviously we interact. So I'm in several organizations. Raise Masters is a great one. I'm also in the Real Estate Council, so that is the Dallas division,
For sure.
and we do a lot of wonderful like community service events. We mentor at-risk youth, and they also build a lot of really cool projects here in Dallas, and they help with networking as well. So I interact with commercial real estate professionals all the time, from accountants to attorneys to land developers and all these different people. So a lot of them are making a lot of money for other people, and they're making a W-2 income. But how would you be able to kind of coach them or say, hey, like you can also make passive money or even become an active general partner on a deal. What does a conversation like that look like for you?
Yeah, I think most people, even if they are in commercial real estate, they're busy with their jobs, right? And they're focused on doing a good job for their clients and for who they're working for. And that's where their time and energy is spent, right? And so when thinking about a passive investment, a lot of people don't even realize, even people in the commercial real estate industry who may be the architects and construction or development accounting, they're not always seeing that, like, hey, this large commercial office or storage or apartment isn't owned by one wealthy person, right? It's potentially and can be owned by several investors pulling their money and going into the deal. So, through a syndication in essence. And so when I talk to people and I educate people on, hey, you can diversify. It's all about diversifying into real estate, through these type of investments. I get a lot of, oh, tell me more, sort of excitement, because sort of that herd mentality is, your 401k and your Roth IRA, and if you've got a business, you can do your solo 401k or self-directed, IRAs. You've got your stock market and all, and I think those are all really great things. I'm not a naysayer when it comes to 401k. I invest in, our, 401k. We have stocks. We're doing real estate. I did crypto. We got out of crypto. But I mean, at the end of the day, it's diversification, and I think that's important, right? And investing in something that you're really, what you really know about, don't go in blindly. I don't think people should sell all their stocks and go into a real estate syndication, sort of like, test drive and see if this is something that's right for you. It's not as easy to get your money out, when it's allocated towards, a business plan that's working on being executed day one of owning the asset. So, a lot of it comes with education. We have a monthly meetup, fourth Monday of every month. We do a virtual meetup. We get people from all over the country that join. We bring in sponsors and attorneys, accountants, other specialties where they're talking about, why passive investing or what to look for in passive investing, why it may be a good fit, but it's not always a good fit for everybody. And I'm not, it's a good fit for myself. It's a good fit for a lot of people for, the tax reasons and, the equity growth and cash flow, et cetera. But all that said, when people are asking questions, it starts with education, right? And pushing out there as much education as possible, and just telling people to learn as much. And then going back, part of your question too is when I'm talking to these real estate professionals, similar organizations that you're in, there's a trust there too, right? That this whole business is based on trust and hard work and ethics. And so when you're surrounding yourself in those organizations and they know you personally through service events or through the networking, it helps lower the fences, I would say, to have that conversation on, possible investing in real estate.
Yeah, for sure. And you mentioned some of the tax benefits. So, I say this very humbly. I'm a man of faith in Jesus, so I don't want to ever brag about anything, and I try to have open hands, but I've made over $20,000 from real estate income this year, in excess of my W-2 job. And I got to speak with my accountant, and it looks like I won't have to pay any taxes on any of that, due to the very legal, tax advantages of real estate investing, and hopefully next year I make a lot more with real estate investing. I don't know if you've heard of this before, but there's a designation called the real estate professional status. So for anybody listening to this podcast that is a full-time real estate professional, definitely get in touch with an accountant that understands the rep status. Because if you work over 750 hours a year, and that's over 51% of your total hours worked, then you can cancel out all of your taxes from income with losses in real estate. So that's something I hope to be utilizing starting next year, and it's going to save me a lot of money.
Yeah. Well, and it's but 750 hours is a lot of hours, right? And if you're working a W-2 and working on the professional or doing real estate investments on the side, if you're ever audited, they're going to want to see, your track record. It's a lot easier if you're fully, doing real estate investments full time with that 750 hours. It definitely brings
Definitely.
up less. So you just got to be careful. Now, a passive, so from a real estate tax standpoint, what you experience is a huge benefit because you're getting passive income, and there's going to be passive losses through, a K-1 statement, right, at the end of the year. That K-1 statement will show typically what your sponsor, your syndicator did it, through a cost segregation, right? And that cost segregation is going to show depreciation, and they're going to provide that form, to the investors. So what I would tell people is this: is a huge savings. It's a huge benefit. But for the average investor out there, passive income is going to be offset by passive losses, right? And so that income, that 20,000 that you did get, was awesome, but you've had more than 20,000 in losses due to depreciation, so you're able to not pay. Now, Uncle Sam still wants his money, right? So at the time of sale, you'll have to work that out. But you made a huge point, William, and that is, talk to your accountant. Everybody's going to be a little different in their situation, but it's a huge, huge benefit, especially as that income of passive income is massive. People are looking for, for that depreciation. Bonus depreciation was 100%. It does expire, I think, I know the end of this year, and I believe it goes down to 80% in
Right.
2023. Still, but that's still a massive amount of depreciation loss that you can show legally, on from a tax perspective. So
Yeah, I love real estate for so many reasons.
yeah, for sure. And it's fun in so many ways, but you've got to surround yourself with the right team, right? You've got to, if you're on the active side, you've got to, have a really good attorney. You've got to have a tax consultant. You've got to have a good cost segregation company. And, the list goes on and on. And if you're a passive investor, you still want similar new things. For every private placement memorandum that comes to your desk, it doesn't hurt to have your attorney just review it. You likely can't change what's in the private placement memorandum, but at least you can be aware of, like, oh, this provision's in here, so there's no gotcha or any like surprising surprises, right? And then from an accountant standpoint, things do get a little bit more complicated, William, too, because a lot of people that do real estate investments for the first time, they don't realize that a K-1 can come in late. And so if it's coming in late, you're not doing your taxes by the March deadline. You're, extending out in October. People that have been, more experienced and have multiple properties that they've invested in, naturally, a lot of times they just naturally just kick the bucket to October because they know things are going to be coming in. But, for a first-time investor, they may not know that, it may come in pretty close to your deadline. And so if you're used to doing your March taxes and, that may be a problem, again, everybody's situation is going to be a little different, but it's just that education and just knowing what to expect so there's no surprises.
Passive investors in real estate are able to receive a check every month. Some people call that mailbox money. We say money really does grow on trees. Visit the website at biggerpictureholdings.com, where we have a ton of free resources to help you learn more about planting your very own money tree.
So the last couple of things, it's just you mentioned self-storage. You've had some single family in the past. You're now trying to acquire multifamily properties and also doing some build to rents. So tell us a little bit more about the build to rents. Obviously, we talk about multifamily a lot on here, but build to rents is a unique niche.
Yeah. So build to rent was definitely not on my radar a couple of years back. This was something end of 2021, through some relationships that I had with some partners. And they brought this build to rent deal in Louisiana. And I was really unsure about the space. I'm a very boring risk adverse person. And my investors, we don't promise sexy returns. I mean, we'll get good returns. And if you're happy with these returns that I'm saying we're going to get, you're going to be really happy if we, do better. But I'm just very, I like to sleep at night. So when I hear about build to rent, it's a higher risk type of development. It's not a property that's already constructed, already has revenue, already has like the marketing and et cetera. So I had to sort of, well, I had to learn a lot about build to rent, and I went through a lot of case studies and learning articles and just asking around. But if you think about a build to rent development, think of it as more of a horizontal multifamily development. So instead of living on top of one another, you know, we're building single family homes, three bed, two bath, and some build to rents are four bed, some are one bed. Like, it just depends on the development. In this particular one I'm part of, it's a three bed, two bath. We're building 98 of these homes and treating it like a multifamily development. We have a property manager, we have a landscaping company, we've got Appfolio, you know, our accounting software. You know, it rolls up just like it would on any of our other apartment type properties. And the fantastic thing is like, I would probably, at least for me, I can speak for myself, and I'm sure those that are listening, if you had the choice of a multifamily living on the second floor, you know, property, or a third floor, having to walk up those stairs every single day. And then when I lived in an apartment, we always chose the third floor because I didn't want people above me, but I'm pretty heavy footed. And the second floor people would always come up and be like, hey, can you like walk softer? Like, it just wasn't a very good environment for me, right? To be in an apartment. So if I had a choice of the apartment or renting one of these build to rent properties and still having the same amenities, I mean, we have walking trails, we've got a dog park, you know, there's a grill area, a playground, you know, similar amenities that you would have in your apartment, you know, most of the time people would say yes. And then we always had dogs. Like, right out of the Marine Corps, I bought, you know, my first lab, and we lived on the 16th floor in Alexandria, maybe it was the 13th floor, but still high up. And he would piss all down the carpet to the elevators and then down the elevator. Like, it just was not a good environment. You know, I had the apartment first before I had the dog. If I had the dog first, well, I probably would have thought differently on that. But the point is that, you know, these properties have larger yards. I'm not having to go upstairs. So there's this huge need, you know, for this type of developments as interest rates are rising. Now, when we bought this property, this land, and we were developing, we weren't thinking really heavily on the interest rates, but it's even helped build to rent even more, William, because people can't, you know, or don't want to buy properties, you know, homes, single family homes with the higher interest rates. I was looking at our mortgage, our property. I mean, it's almost double what, if I were to buy today, my mortgage payment would almost be double than what it was. I mean, it just,
for sure, yeah.
And I wouldn't buy, like, it just doesn't make sense at this point. I don't know. Some people say it makes sense because you can always refinance, but who knows? I mean, that's a whole nother subject we can go down. But going back to build to rent, you know, you've got a large group of people who aren't wanting to buy. They don't want to live in a traditional apartment building. They're wanting to rent. You also have older generation people that don't want to have the responsibility of homeownership either. You know, it's crazy that sometimes that may sound like, but, you know, there's expenses that comes with owning a house, and real estate taxes, example, in Texas are crazy. Even if you're getting that 65 and older, you know, there's some tax benefits, but property tax benefits, but, you know, so you have all these different demographics that fit this type of mold. And then when we go to sell, so we've done eight, we have our construction loan. And, so once we have, and over the next month, we'll have all the infrastructure, the roads, the sewer plants going in right now. And then we can start doing the vertical construction, which is the remaining 90 homes. That 90 homes is on a construction loan. So once those homes are built, then, you know, we're going to sell. And once we sell, it's similar in the fact that we're able to sell as one development, similar when you're looking at a multifamily. So, you know, the way somebody would underwrite that 98 single family homes would be the similar way they would underwrite 98 units in one apartment building, right? There's a lot of institutional money that's going after it. There's a lot of individual syndicators. So it hits a lot of, you know, I'm always looking at the exit strategy. And so it hits a lot of check boxes for me. The last thing I'll say too, William, and again, I'm a pretty boring person, and when I look at real estate, it's risk, right? And how do you de-risk an investment? And the thing I really loved about build to rent is if the economy just goes haywire next year, you know, and it just tanks, or the year after, whenever you're in a development, I don't have to finish all homes to get my certificate of occupancy. Like an apartment development, and I see these a lot, and they're, you know, overall good investments, but again, it's risk. So if you're in the middle of a development of an apartment building, you can't rent those units until you get certificate of occupancy on the entire building. Even if you have 20 of those renovated, until you get the COO of everything, you can't. You can't, you know, move in residents. Whereas these single family homes, William, I can rent these 8 homes that I've already told you about that are built. They're already rented. They're already cash flowing. Mm-hmm. And then once we get the remaining horizontal work done and we're ready for vertical, we can stop if we ever need to. We can even turn it into an HOA and sell off like single family homes. Like, so there's different exit strategies that really attracted to me. That, you know, when I went to our investor base, I said, hey, this is something new. But it does come with some risk because it's a development, but there's right. a lot of ways how we can de-risk it. And these are what we're doing. So again, another long answer, but build to rent developments are here to stay. They're happening all over. There are developments that you would think, oh, those are another, you know, housing community that Lennar or these other home building builders are building, but no, it's built to rent. And you know, it will continue growing and, you know, gaining popularity for sure.
For sure. Yeah. I have several friends that are doing projects like that right now.
Yeah.
So the last couple things I want to do, I always try to ask if there's anything that you've experienced or seen. You know, I want to educate the listeners. There's a lot of hype around real estate and investing, and you know, it's not always roses. Mm-hmm. If there's something that you've seen or lessons that you've learned that you'd like to share, and then want to finish up with just being able to shine a spotlight on you and your biggest accomplishment or thing that you're most proud of so far in real estate.
Yeah, so I think people, look, real estate is not rocket science. This is not a hard, it's business. And every property is a business plan, whether it's a single family exactly. home, multifamily office, storage. You know, you hear in real estate, location, location, location. I think that's truer than ever, you know, and that's why I focus heavily on Texas markets. Jobs are coming here. It's a landlord friendly state. You know, you're in Dallas area, you know, I'm heavily in the Houston area. Like we're seeing a lot of growth. And you know, when anybody like a passive investor is looking at a business deal, one, they got to be sophisticated. Many times they have to be accredited. And it should be very similar to when you look at those, when you look at an opportunity to invest, does it make sense? Is there something that doesn't seem right? You know, like, you know, if rental revenues is 15% year over year for the next 2-3 years, like, is that possible? I mean, maybe, but is that likely? I don't know. And if you don't know, then that's a risk, right? Mm-hmm. Now, if we can go up with inflation 3-4%, you know, this year was an 8%, you know, inflation. So, you know, typically rents can circle around inflation, then, you know, that may make sense. On the expense side, you know, where are they sitting on expenses? Do the numbers, does that make sense? Is there anything that makes you question the investment? And if the sponsor or the other person is not able to answer that, then that's okay. You can move on. There's plenty of other deals, right? Many times there's a good friend of mine who is a passive investor who likes to ask questions, which is great. But he feels like he's missing on investment opportunities because he's not moving quick enough. And I'm on the opposite. I'm like, hey, you know, those investment opportunities, there's going to be plenty of them out there. And do your due diligence, take your time, make the right decision. So that would be some advice from a passive investor standpoint is, one, take the time to be educated, get to know the sponsor, syndicator, look at the entire team, feel that trust. If something feels off or you feel like, hey, something's just not right, follow your gut instinct because you've been put into a situation where you're fortunate enough to invest in those type of opportunities because you followed your gut or you followed your knowledge. And, you know, again, it's not rocket science. On the active side, I see a lot of people sitting on the sidelines right now. And in a way, I'm grateful for it because it's just less competition to go into real estate. You know, because for a while there, you know, I would make an offer on something and somebody would come in $1 million higher. Literally, you know, especially in Central Texas, Austin, San Antonio, people just wanted to buy or say they had properties in Austin, San Antonio. And, you know, obviously I wasn't going to pay, like I'm a cement offer. There's always negotiation, you know, but I'm never going to undercut $1 million. Just anyway. So the point is that it's providing a lot of opportunities right now for people who are willing to stay in the game. And real estate, you know, they're not building dirt. And so you're investing in the dirt, right? And if you're investing in a good location and the property can cash flow, now it may not cash flow year one because you're buying a value add, deep value add, and you're repositioning. But if you believe in the business plan and you have the team to execute the plan, then it's not a bad time to get into real estate. And if you have, you know, for our investors, you know, we typically say a 5 to 7 year hold period. But if I'm doing a 5 year hold, my debt service is 7 or potentially 10 years long, and it gives us time to make the best decision for our investors and not be like, oh, we have to sell because our debt service is coming to an end. Right. And so that's just part of the, you know, looking at the long game and realizing like, hey, if you're trying to flip in the next year or two, that may be challenging. But if you're in it 5, 6, 7 years or longer, you know, historically, real estate is going to continue to appreciate. And one thing, William, I love about real estate, and I told you I'm in stocks and 401k and I did some crypto, is I don't have to worry about Twitter devaluing my asset or my investment 20-30% overnight or in a moment's notice. I don't have to worry about what's going overseas and, you know, potentially impacting our investments, right?
Yes, sir. I love that. So shine a spotlight on you. How can people get in touch with you? And
yeah, so I would say if anyone's interested in learning about multifamily syndications, whether you invest with me or not, it's education. Go to CREIpartners.com. There's a lot of resources through a podcast. There's an ebook. There are tons of blogs. We've got a YouTube channel link there. Our meetup link is there. So, you know, highly suggest and recommend people go to CREIpartners.com. You mentioned a spotlight, things that we've done. I mean, over the last year, we've closed on $33 million worth of assets, which is super exciting. And we've done so by, you know, underwriting incredible amount of deals and surrounding ourselves with the right partners. And then fortunately for us, building that trust and those relationships with investors, where, you know, back in 2021, it was extremely hard to build that investor base, but we've been very fortunate to build that and build the trust. And it's all, the trust is based on education and relationships. So anybody wants to reach out, definitely go to CREIpartners.com and let's be in touch.
Sir, well, thank you so much, Wayne. It was great talking to you.
Yeah, thanks, William. I appreciate it.
Like and subscribe below. A new episode will air every Tuesday at 7 a.m. Are you looking for more content? Visit our website, biggerpictureholdings.com. And remember, money really does grow on trees.